From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey, and this is insect season. In Illinois, that means ticks, which are actually arachnids, not insects, mosquitoes, and other bugs, many on the prowl, looking for humans and other animals to bite or attach themselves to. The Illinois Department of Public Health and other authorities are marking Lyme Disease Awareness Month this May, and a team of entomologists is working to track tick and mosquito populations, trying to discern how climate change is affecting their growth and spread. Joining us now are Holly C. Tootin, vector ecologist with a background in parasitic arthropods. Holly leads the statewide tick research and surveillance program at the Medical Entomology Lab, which is part of the Illinois Natural History Survey. Hello, Holly. Welcome to the 21st.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Also with us is Chris Stone, lab director and mosquito expert at the same Medical Entomology Lab. Chris, welcome. Thank you for being here as well.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning. Listeners, our lines are open for your questions. 800-222-9455 is the number. Any mosquito or tick questions you might have, now is your chance to ask an entomologist anything. Call us at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Of course, you can always tweet us at 21st Show. And if you want to see images of what we're talking about as we're talking about it, we've got some posted on our website. You can follow along at 21stshow.org. Holly, let's begin with you. What is the statewide tick research and surveillance program? What are you and your colleagues looking for?
Fundamentally, we're looking for ticks. We go out into the environment across the state, collect ticks using methods like pulling cloth drags across the forest floor. And then we bring the ticks back to our lab, identify them to species, and then test them for different types of disease agents. One that most people are familiar with is the agent that causes Lyme disease. This is a project that we're conducting with the Illinois Department of Public Health, with the goal of eventually having multiple visits to multiple sites in every county in the state to get ticks, get them back here, test them, and then transmit those data at publicly available maps that are at the IDPH website.
Can you talk about, I'm looking at a photo of you in a dense forest. You're wearing what looks like, I would call like a beekeeper suit almost, setting some kind of bug trap. You mentioned these cloths. I think some people might picture, you walking around with a jar and a set of tweezers or so. How do you actually go about your day-to-day work as a vector ecologist collecting ticks?
Right, yeah. So you're looking at a picture of me in the woods, actually setting a CO2 trap for ticks. They're attracted to the CO2 in the breath of their vertebrate hosts. And so in that picture, I'm laying down a piece of cloth and I'm actually putting dry ice on that cloth. And that dry ice, as it sublimates into the air, as it turns into a gas, that CO2 that's emitted. And any ticks that are in the environment will come out and they'll crawl towards that carbon dioxide. After a couple hours, I can come back and I do have a jar and forceps. I have a small vial of alcohol and I collect the ticks off of that cloth and I put them into the vial. Another way that we collect ticks is we attach a similar cloth to a sturdy wooden dowel and attach it to a string. And then we pull that at a slow walking pace across the vegetation and ticks will transfer onto that cloth. And then every 10 meters or so, we stop and we look at the cloth and again, we pick up any ticks we see and put them in ethanol and carry them back to the lab. The beekeeper suit image is part of our personal protective equipment that we use. We're being asked to go into habitats where we're likely to find ticks. And so preventing tick bites is quite important to us. And so we have a whole set of rules that we follow in terms of what we wear and how we behave in order to prevent tick bites. And importantly, these are rules that other people can follow too when they're out recreationally in the woods.
Yeah, and I'm going to ask you to hold on that point because I do want to ask you, we've got a call coming in with a question about this, and we'll talk a little bit later about how we keep ourselves safe. Chris, first I want to bring you into the conversation. As lab director, I understand one of the things you look at are vectors and climate change and how that's affecting some of the mosquito and tick population. Can you talk about with your work with mosquitoes and what you're focusing on?
Sure. Yeah, we have lots of different projects going on at the moment. We also sort of like the project or the program Holly was describing on the tick side, we do something very similar with mosquitoes, also working closely with the Illinois Department of Public Health. And the goal there is really to update our state of knowledge about the diversity of mosquitoes throughout the state and how that might have changed. Because the last time that had really been investigated was back in the 1960s, and we've had quite a few invasive mosquito species and possibly some mosquitoes that had been here in the past that might have, you know, that might have disappeared. So a big part of what we're doing is really trying to improve our understanding of what different mosquitoes do we have in different parts of the states, and particularly the ones that we might want to be concerned about. So a lot of focus in Illinois is deservedly on West Nile virus, but there are lots of other viruses that mosquitoes can transmit, and sometimes by very different species of mosquitoes. And that's sort of one of the areas that we're working on quite a bit now. On climate change, I know you had a discussion about this earlier this week about the Nature Conservancy paper, and I was together with other people, I made a contribution to that as well. So we were sort of investigating, reviewing what the effects of climate change on mosquitoes and ticks in the state might be. There's a number of takeaways, and some will be very complicated, so it depends on how much detail you want to go into. But what one big takeaway is that winters are getting warmer. That's sort of one of the big changes, and that will have very sort of predictable, clear impacts on some mosquitoes, particularly these invasive mosquitoes, where the cold winter really seems to limit them. So warmer winters is just going to translate in further northward spread and potentially new mosquitoes establishing here.
So more mosquitoes in more parts of Illinois where maybe they had not been a threat in the past, or at least the threat would come from the disease those mosquitoes might be carrying. What sort of, we don't have to go into great detail, but what sort of diseases that might not once have been a threat in Illinois should people either worry about now or be anticipating having to take precautions against in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years?
Yes, so the one big invasive mosquito that has been in Illinois for quite a while, but really is expanding further north is the tiger mosquito, right? And we know that is a species that can transmit things like dengue and chikungunya and Zika in some locations. So that's I don't think people need to be exceedingly concerned about that at the time, but there is potential for that. One disease one virus that we're very focused on and very intrigued by is one called Eastern Equine Encephalitis virus, which is a very rare virus in the United States. But people who get it have often very poor outcomes. There's a very high mortality rate associated with it. And over the last few years, we've seen worrisome spikes or increases in those numbers. It's still exceedingly rare, including in states right next to us, like Michigan and Indiana. So we haven't seen human cases of that virus in Illinois yet, but that is one of the mosquito species that transmits that virus is one that we're very interested in and trying to develop a better understanding of as to where do we find it in the state and is there risk associated with it.
Let me take a moment to remind listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. We're talking with two guests from the Medical Entomology Lab at the Illinois Natural History Survey. They're looking at tick and mosquito populations in Illinois. Our lines are open for your questions. Anything on ticks or mosquitoes you may have, 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. And I want to go now to a caller from Woodstock, Illinois. Hello, thank you for calling in.
Hi, my name is Greg, and I've heard that garlic spray is good for repelling ticks. In other words, garlic in an alcohol base and then sprayed on the legs and arms. Is that true?
Okay, sort of a home remedy, Greg. Thanks for the call. Holly, how about that? Garlic spray and alcohol?
You know, there are a lot of home remedies and natural knowledge about tick control or tick repellent chemical applications, and you know, garlic itself, it would create a chemical application. Chemicals are quite natural. in general, what I tell people is if they are planning on using repellents, to choose an EPA registered repellent. When you're looking in the section that has repellents in the grocery store or the farm store, you'll see EPA registration symbol on the back, because it means that those have been tested under controlled conditions to prove their efficacy for repelling ticks and mosquitoes. And the EPA actually has a section on their website. If you go to your preferred search engine and type in EPA repellent choice tool, you can put in your different requirements. Do you want it to be a man-made chemical? Do you want it to be a natural chemical? Who will you be using it on? And then it can tell you which EPA registered repellents are commercially available that you can use. There are some that are derived from natural plants that have been EPA registered as being effective. And then there are also some that are man-made chemicals that are effective too.
So it sounds like the key thing, though, is get something that has been tested and certified instead of taking your chances with something that, you know, you would brew up in your own kitchen.
Well, what I can say is that's what I personally do, because we know that those have been shown through scientific investigation to be effective.
Okay. Holly, let me ask you about some of the specific ticks you work with. The black-legged and Gulf Coast ticks. Are those the most prevalent ticks in Illinois? What should people know about the diseases they can transmit?
So I think probably one of the most important points here is that different tick species transmit different disease agents. So if somebody has encountered a tick, it is very useful to get an identification of the tick species. We do have four primary tick species in Illinois that are of human and companion animal concern that people might encounter when they're out in natural areas. The black-legged tick is one. It's also commonly known as the deer tick. And that is a vector of the agent that causes Lyme. And there are a few other disease agents we're picking up in these ticks in Illinois. We also have the Lone Star tick. That's very prevalent in southern Illinois, becoming more prevalent in central Illinois, and will eventually occur across the state. It's a very aggressive biter. It's associated with diseases such as ehrlichiosis that can affect humans and dogs. It's also associated with an emerging disease known as the mammal meat allergy or alpha-gal. Their bite can elicit an allergy to mammal meat in people who are affected. Additionally, we have the American dog tick, which is the one people are most probably familiar with. It's throughout the state. It's a very large tick, and you're likely to notice it if it's on your clothes. And then finally, the Gulf Coast tick, which is a pretty new find in the state. For a long time, it had been thought to be quite rare. Maybe it had fallen off a bird, a migrating bird. But we did a large study in southern Illinois last year, and we found it in many counties across southern Illinois. And it can transmit a disease agent very similar to Rocky Mountain spotted fever, which is transmitted by the American dog tick. And if people are interested in learning about where we're finding these different species in the natural habitat and what disease agents we are finding in these species, they can go to those publicly available maps at IDPH and they can click on individual counties and see which ticks and which disease agents we're finding there.
Okay, good information. Let's see if we need to take a break in about a minute and a half, but I think we can get in one more call before we do. Tana is on the line from Menard County. Tana, thanks for calling in.
Hi. Is there a human vaccine for Eastern equine encephalitis like there is for horses?
Okay, thank you for the question. Chris, do you want to take that?
Sure. No, I think the issue there, and that's an issue that we see a lot with vector-borne diseases, is that the number of cases in humans are just so incredibly low that it, you know, my impression is that it doesn't make sense for companies to sort of invest in vaccines for humans. Like Eastern equine encephalitis, in a normal year, it's maybe a handful of human cases, so it's not quite at the level where that makes sense.
Okay. Well, we are going to continue this conversation about ticks and mosquitoes in Illinois. I'm talking with two guests from the Medical Entomology Lab at the Illinois Natural History Survey. Our phone lines are open, 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. Producer gave me a note, Mary, sorry we accidentally hung up on you. If you want to call back in, please do so, 800-222-9455. We're going to continue this conversation after the break, and then we're going to be marking NPR's 50th anniversary with a look back at public radio here in Illinois and where we might be going in the future. That's all coming up on the 21st. Stay with us.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. Whether you're just starting out or upgrading to your dream home, Busey can guide you every step of the way, because they know there's no place like home. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.
This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. If you're just tuning in, we're continuing our conversation about ticks and mosquitoes with two guests from the Medical Entomology Lab, which is part of the Illinois Natural History Survey. Holly Tootin is a vector ecologist with a background in parasitic arthropods. Also with us is Chris Stone, lab director and mosquito expert at the lab. Our phone lines are open, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. And let's go now to Marianne is calling on line one.
Okay. I'm sorry. Did you have a question for
us? Okay. Well, let me ask you a question, Holly, while we sort that out with our producers. Where do people need to take precautions for ticks? Is this only when you're going out into the state fish and wildlife area, or is it even walking in a city park, or even just walking down the sidewalk in an urban area, for example? How concerned about ticks should people be in the different environments they might find themselves in?
Yeah, I don't want people to get the impression that ticks are raining down from the sky. But it is something that I think, in general, it's useful for everyone to kind of raise their level of awareness of tick behavior and habitats that ticks are associated with. Depending on the species of tick, where you might find it can vary. They can be found in fallow fields, roadside ditches, prairies, but then also quite often in forested areas, in parks, whether those are rural parks or urban parks. Ticks can still be found in these places. We know that people encounter ticks in some urban areas of the state, and the first place that the Lyme disease bacterium was noted in Illinois was in Cook County, which has highly urbanized areas. So while I don't think that people need to feel like they need to wear tick PPE walking down the sidewalk in Chicago, I do think that it's important that people understand that when you have natural areas with tick hosts available, they can be present. And so keeping that awareness about themselves, for instance, in thinking about doing a tick check when you're in the shower or before you go to bed, when you have been in natural areas, can be helpful in terms of finding a tick that might be attached before it could cause any problems.
Okay, let's go back to the phone lines. I think we've got everything sorted out. Marianne, I understand you have a question. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, Do tick bites affect geese?
All right, Marianne, thank you for calling in. We love hearing from our younger listeners. Holly, do you want to take that?
So the hard ticks that we've been talking about aren't as commonly associated with geese. Personally, I'm not aware of any tick-borne disease agents harming geese, but it's also not totally my area of expertise. I think maybe your caller could educate me about it. we do know that there are other species of ticks. They're known as sock ticks, and they can be associated with bird nests. So when we think of hard ticks, those kind of they bite and then they leave after they've gotten their meal. But sometimes these soft ticks that are associated with aquatic birds, they can kind of hang out in the nest and come out and take little sips from the birds. And sometimes they can reach pretty high numbers.
Okay. And I want to remind listeners, you can go to our website now if you want to see images of some of the ticks we've been talking about, the black-legged tick or deer tick, the Gulf Coast tick. That's at 21stshow.org. Let's take one more call, I think, in this segment. Cannon is on the line. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, thanks for having me on the air. I had a question about attracting possums to your property to control the tick population. Are there any hints, tips, or tricks for getting possums into your area naturally?
All right. Interesting question. Chris, I wonder if you want to, if you can weigh in on that sort of attracting possums to your garden to potentially keep ticks at bay in your own backyard. Chris, are you with it? Or maybe Holly,
yeah,
if you want
to.
Oh, sorry. Oh, Zoom muting issue. That's all right. It happens. It's 2021.
A muting issue. It's an interesting or a great suggestion. We do know possums help. They do seem to, you know, probably when grooming themselves, eat or get rid of ticks in the environment. But as for how to attract them to your backyard, I'm completely out of my depth. I would have no useful suggestions there.
Okay. Holly, I don't know if you have anything on that, or we can leave that there.
Yeah, I think maybe that might be something to talk to a master naturalist about. Yeah. You know, there are studies that indicate that possums can have a reducing effect on ticks and tick-borne pathogens, but the only thing that springs to my mind is spreading trash around your yard, and I don't think that's a good suggestion.
That's great. Yeah, probably not. Let's not do that. All right. I think we're going to leave this conversation there. I want to thank my two guests. They've been Holly Tootin, who's a vector ecologist at the Medical Entomology Lab at the Illinois Natural History Survey, and Chris Stone, lab director and mosquito expert at the Medical Entomology Lab. Holly, Chris, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st, and thanks for your work keeping tabs on these populations in Illinois.
Thank you. And I do want to encourage people to check out the IDPH tick surveillance map at their website.
All right. And we'll make sure we have a link to that as well on our website, 21stshow.org. More to come. Stay with us.